Ministry of Education and Culture, Higher and Tertiary Education, Principrian Examinations 2015, Listening Skills. You will hear three different radio programs. You will hear each program twice. Exercise 1. You will hear a dialogue about cars and traffic. For questions 1 to 5, choose the correct answer. A, B, or C. You have 1 minute to read exercise 1. First listening.
So Shefani, what is your current job?
Well, I work as a transport planner for a consultancy, an international consultancy based in New Zealand.
Okay, so transport planner, is that like you plan things being transported, like across the ocean?
No, that's, you're talking about logistics there. So no, that's not logistics. Transport planning stems from town planning, town or city planning. If you think about it, a city is a network of buildings and of transport infrastructure. So you've got your roads, you've got your trains, you've got your buses, and you've got place for your cars. So basically, transport planning involves planning of things that you can use to move people around.
So, like, what specifically do you do? Do you, like, you know, design bus routes or...
Well, the job is very, very varied. So I can plan bus routes. That's something I can do. But quite often it ends up being policy-driven work. What I end up doing is environmental impact assessments, for example. So if you've got a new project coming in, so if you've got a new shopping center, for example, I'd look at what impacts it would have on the environment in terms of traffic, in terms of what options people have to get to the shopping center. And if there is a possibility to reduce car use, how could that be implemented?
So what are some ways that you can reduce car use?
Well, there are quite a few different ways. First would be to influence people's behavior. So change their mental attitude towards transport. If you can make it easy for them to walk and to cycle to a given destination, they'll choose to do so. Second is to hike up petrol prices, which is something that the government controls, obviously. The other thing you could do is make parking of cars very difficult at common public places. If finding a car park is difficult, people are more likely to catch public transport or just to walk or cycle. The other thing is to promote the benefits of taking public transport and of walking and cycling. Benefits such as health benefits. I mean, there are benefits from walking because it's healthier, and then there are benefits of not driving, which means you're not emitting pollution into the air. So overall, a win-win situation if you don't drive.
Can you give us some tangible results where this has actually happened?
Absolutely. A project I recently worked on was on a shopping center in Auckland. It's quite a big shopping center in the east of Auckland, and there is not good public transport around. So there are not that many buses. There's no train station there. A lot of car parking. So the owners of the shopping center wanted to influence people and make them catch the bus, the little that was available. So they hired our consultancy, and I worked on some of the reports for them. And we basically looked at simple things that we could do to promote walking and cycling, first off, and then buses. So the first thing we did was we organized a fun run on a Sunday where people from the local vicinity were invited. So when people walk to the shopping center on the Sunday, they realized they could actually walk it. It was quite simple. And a lot of these people had never, ever attempted to walk. So we ended up getting a 10% increase in the people who traveled by walking or cycling, per se. So what we had was people realizing, oh, you know what? I could walk there. But because they'd never done it before, it was something they just didn't want to attempt.
So basically, your job is reduce cars.
If you want to sum it up that way, yes. But I think if you flip it over and say promote the use of public transport, walking and cycling, that's what my aim is.
You have 1 minute to complete exercise one. Second listening.
So, Shefani, what is your current job?
Well, I work as a transport planner for a consultancy, an international consultancy based in New Zealand.
Okay, so transport planner, is that like you plan things being transported, like across the ocean?
No, that's, you're talking about logistics there. So no, that's not logistics. Transport planning stems from town planning, town or city planning. If you think about it, a city is a network of buildings and of transport infrastructure. So you've got your roads, you've got your trains, you've got your buses, and you've got place for your cars. So basically, transport planning involves planning of things that you can use to move people around.
So, like, what specifically do you do? Do you, like, you know, design bus routes or?
Well, the job is very, very varied. So I can plan bus routes, that's something I can do, but quite often it ends up being policy-driven work. What I end up doing is environmental impact assessments, for example. So if you've got a new project coming in, so if you've got a new shopping center, for example, I'd look at what impacts it would have on the environment in terms of traffic, in terms of what options people have to get to the shopping center, and if there is a possibility to reduce car use, how could that be implemented?
So what are some ways that you can reduce car use?
Well, there are quite a few different ways. First would be to influence people's behavior. So change their mental attitude towards transport. If you can make it easy for them to walk and to cycle to a given destination, they'll choose to do so. Second is to hike up petrol prices, which is something that the government controls, obviously. The other thing you could do is make parking of cars very difficult at common public places. If finding a car park is difficult, people are more likely to catch public transport or just to walk or cycle. The other thing is to promote the benefits of taking public transport and of walking and cycling. Benefits such as health benefits. I mean, there are benefits from walking because it's healthier, and then there are benefits of not driving, which means you're not emitting pollution into the air. So overall, a win-win situation if you don't drive.
Can you give us some tangible results where this has actually happened?
Absolutely. A project I recently worked on was on a shopping center in Auckland. It's quite a big shopping center in the east of Auckland, and there is not good public transport around. So there are not that many buses. There's no train station there. A lot of car parking. So the owners of the shopping center wanted to influence people and make them catch the bus, the little that was available. So they hired our consultancy, and I worked on some of the reports for them. And we basically looked at simple things that we could do to promote walking and cycling, first off, and then buses. So the first thing we did was we organized a fun run on a Sunday where people from the local vicinity were invited. So when people walk to the shopping center on the Sunday, they realized they could actually walk it. It was quite simple. And a lot of these people had never, ever attempted to walk. So we ended up getting a 10% increase in the people who traveled by walking or cycling, per se. So what we had was people realizing, oh, you know what? I could walk there. But because they'd never done it before, it was something they just didn't want to attempt.
So basically, your job is reduce cars.
If you want to sum it up that way, yes. But I think if you flip it over and say promote the use of public transport, walking and cycling, that's what my aim is.
You have 1 minute to check your answers. Exercise 2. You will hear a talk about hunger. Put a tick in the appropriate box. You have 1 minute to read Exercise 2. First listening.
A new report from the United Nations says 1 in 8 people around the world does not have enough food. The UN reports that 842 million people suffer from very serious hunger. This is about 12% of the world's population. This percentage has gone down. It was 17% in 1992. The UN says many countries still cannot find ways to feed their people. Africa is the region with the highest number of undernourished people. The UN says that 1 in 5 Africans is undernourished. In over 19 African nations, more than a quarter of the population goes hungry. The UN said 98% of the world's hungry people live in developing countries. The World Food Programme, WFP, explained that undernourishment is not having enough food for an active and healthy life, and an inability to meet dietary energy requirements. The WFP said hunger is now the largest risk to people's health around the world. It is a more serious problem than AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. One of the biggest reasons for people being hungry is war. The UN said developing countries that have experienced war in the past 20 years have bigger problems feeding their people. Scientists say this situation could get worse because of climate change. Hotter temperatures in more countries will mean farmers cannot grow enough food, leading to more hunger.
You have 1 minute to complete exercise 2. Second listening.
A new report from the United Nations says 1 in 8 people around the world does not have enough food. The UN reports that 842 million people suffer from very serious hunger. This is about 12% of the world's population. This percentage has gone down. It was 17% in 1992. The UN says many countries still cannot find ways to feed their people. Africa is the region with the highest number of undernourished people. The UN says that 1 in 5 Africans is undernourished. In over 19 African nations, more than a quarter of the population goes hungry. The UN said 98% of the world's hungry people live in developing countries. The World Food Programme, WFP, explained that undernourishment is not having enough food for an active and healthy life, and an inability to meet dietary energy requirements. The WFP said hunger is now the largest risk to people's health around the world. It is a more serious problem than AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis combined. One of the biggest reasons for people being hungry is war. The UN said developing countries that have experienced war in the past 20 years have bigger problems feeding their people. Scientists say this situation could get worse because of climate change. Hotter temperatures in more countries will mean farmers cannot grow enough food, leading to more hunger.
You have 1 minute to check your answers. Exercise 3. You will hear talk about Malala. Listen and fill in the blanks. Write only one word in each blank. You have 1 minute to read Exercise 3. First listening.
The 17-year-old girls' rights activist Malala Yousafzai has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for 2014. She was one of 2 Nobel laureates to be declared winners this year. The other is Kailash Satyarthi, who campaigns for children's rights. Malala was given the accolade exactly 2 years and a day after a Taliban gunman shot her in the head on her school bus. Following her recovery in a British hospital, Malala has toured the world speaking up for the rights for girls to receive an education. She once told reporters that going to school is like walking through a magic door to your dreams. Malala becomes the youngest ever recipient of the prize, and the second Pakistani to scoop the award. The Nobel Committee said Ms. Yousafzai and Mr. Satyarthi won the prize for their struggle against the suppression of children and young people, and for the right of all children to education. Pakistan's Prime Minister, Nawaz Sharif, congratulated Malala, calling her the pride of Pakistan. He said, "She has made her countrymen proud. Her achievement is unparalleled and unequalled." He urged all children to follow her lead. Mr. Satyarthi told Al Jazeera that his award was for the many voices of children who are victims of servitude across the world. He added, "The Nobel Committee regards it as an important point for a Hindu and a Muslim, an Indian and a Pakistani, to join in a common struggle for education."
You have 1 minute to complete exercise 3. Second listening.
The 17-year-old girls' rights activist Malala Yousafzai has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for 2014. She was one of two Nobel laureates to be declared winners this year. The other is Kailash Satyarthi, who campaigns for children's rights. Malala was given the accolade exactly 2 years and a day after a Taliban gunman shot her in the head on her school bus. Following her recovery in a British hospital, Malala has toured the world speaking up for the rights for girls to receive an education. She once told reporters that going to school is like walking through a magic door to your dreams. Malala becomes the youngest ever recipient of the prize, and the second Pakistani to scoop the award. The Nobel Committee said Ms. Yousafzai and Mr. Satyarthi won the prize for their struggle against the suppression of children and young people, and for the right of all children to education. Pakistan's Prime Minister, Nawaz Sharif, congratulated Malala, calling her the pride of Pakistan. He said, "She has made her countrymen proud. Her achievement is unparalleled and unequalled." He urged all children to follow her lead. Mr. Satyarthi told Al Jazeera that his award was for the many voices of children who are victims of servitude across the world. He added, "The Nobel Committee regards it as an important point for a Hindu and a Muslim, an Indian and a Pakistani, to join in a common struggle for education."
You have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening part of the examination. Please, put your pens down.